Captain Wright, Reel 1.
Tends to be chronological, but...
Was there a tradition of military service in your family background?
In a way, yes. My father, who was in the United Rifles and went into the London Regiment, was in France, and he stayed in the army, or was considering it, and then he came out in, I think, about 1919. So it was very limited, but he had a great attachment for what he'd done, and hence he had a great interest in army matters.
Was there anybody else in the family, apart from your father, who had served? Was there anyone regular in particular?
No. No, they were mainly doctors, my uncles. My father was one of 10, my mother was one of 10. And I think we must have had about half a dozen doctors. They had, largely, they'd been in the RAMC, I suppose, yes. But otherwise, no. I had a cousin who was Royal Navy, and that's about the lot.
Did you do any military or pre-military training when you were at school or at university?
Well, I was OTC in both, or STC, I think, at Cambridge.
Can you remember what you learned in the OTC? What was on the syllabus of training and how it was taught? And
oh, mainly small arms and fieldcraft. We had field days, and we were supervised, in a way, by the Coldstream Guards, for whom I've always had a great respect.
Can you remember if you did any tactical training, and if so, what sort of tactical training when you were at school?
I can't remember anything that was other than section discipline, I suppose, and we just, as regards tactics, went where we were told.
If you can cast your mind back that far, when you were doing section drills at that stage, how would you have conducted an attack at section level?
I think possibly, because I'd read quite a lot about the First World War, I could see no point in head-on assault. And we were taught use of ground, and in that sense, I suppose, it left one with a certain amount of initiative about how one moved. But no, it was largely how to use a rifle musketry and orders. We were told to deploy, I can remember, and that's about all.
And what about the university training corps at Cambridge?
I think we were divided roughly into the type of unit that we were going to join. Because I went to Cambridge on a short, what was it called? A short course. I did 6 months at Cambridge and then went straight into the army.
Had you already committed yourself to joining the army?
Oh, indeed, yes. I joined in October 40, I think.
And was there ever any question about what choice of arm you would make?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, because it was part of the drill, really. In order to go on this short course, one had to opt for the sappers. In other words, it was a truncated form of what used to happen in the Royal Military Academy at Woolwich.
What was it that attracted you to the sappers?
I had an uncle who was brother of my, or half-brother of my mother, who was an engineer, quite a famous engineer, really. He was the least military man you could imagine. and I was more or less directed in his footsteps, which I never even approached. But no, we didn't have any connection with the Sapas at all.
When you were growing up in the 20s and 30s, can you remember when you first developed the idea that there was likely to be another major conflict?
Oh, indeed, yes. Because we'd already had Munich, the Munich crisis, and it was obvious that the balloon was going up, and I just took it as part of what I was destined for.
Did you have any ideas about the way in which the war might be fought?
Difficult to say. I can't say I did, no. No.
You were saying you'd read about the First World War quite a lot.
I hadn't read much then. I must say I was, and even now I can't read about the First World War with any pleasure at all. My father actually was in one of the better planned battles that the British Army fought. He was in Plumer's Corps, and he was at the Battle of Messines, which of course under they had these big mines that the Sappers had dug, and it seemed to be an extremely well planned operation, which is more than you can say for a lot of the others.
Plumer had a reputation for always being meticulous in his preparation and planning, and very careful to try and minimise his casualties.
Yes, yes. But I tell you a thing which had, I'll probably go into this later, about, I'm not anti-gunners at all, but I found that the belief that artillery fire alone would penetrate enemy wire, I thought was in cloud cuckoo land, and I still do.
Well, there seems to be a belief now that you could win wars by air power alone.
Well, I'm astounded by that, yes, by what has recently happened. It is very, very strange, yes.
It's a similar sort of belief in a way.
Well, I think it's been borne out in a way because of the technology, but I think what I, my standpoint now on my experience and what I've read and all the rest of it is that the most vital thing in any army operation is intelligence. And I, if I may go into details, I, a book which I have explained the retaking of Kohima, and it contrasted the tactics of the Gurkhas in 7th Brigade, 7th Indian Brigade, with those of two British Div, and I was astounded at the casualties the British had, whereas I think it was 10th Gurkhas went on this wonderful system of masses of small units, well, two men actually, a rifleman and an NCO, going out, lying up, looking to see where Japs were moving and all the rest of it. And they were incredibly successful with very, very few casualties. And I think that is the absolute answer. I think I've always been obsessed with that, even from the time when I was actually in the war.
The 2nd Division, as I remember, had been trained for mechanised warfare in Europe and were really rather surprised to find themselves in Burma at all.
Well, as I understood it, they were training for combined ops, weren't they?
They, yes. they had trained for amphibious assault as well.
Yes.
Yes. And I think they had a very much a European approach to doing things.
I felt that, yes. Despite the fact that at Kohima, it's very difficult to know, being a sapper and saddled with this ubiquity business, I looked up in various regimental records what their battle honours were, and if I were with that regiment, I put them on my list. But I think Theta Kahima was about the seventh battle I'd been in, and everything else was totally sort of sidelined by what I went through there and what I learnt there. And to see, I think it was the Cameron Highlanders going into at a Japanese British and straight at them. And I was with a British battalion, I was in the West Kent Territorials, and we were horrified to see this.
It was the Camerons and the Dorsets were there as well, weren't they? And
we were relieved by the Dorsets, yes. I was very attached to them.
5th Brigade, I think it was.
Yes.
Yeah.
They had the most dreadful casualties, not only in the other ranks, but brigade commander was killed. Several battalion commanders were killed. Terrible.
That was all a long way ahead. What happened then when you were at Cambridge? What did you learn in that concentrated 6-month course?
Well, we virtually took what was the curriculum for the qualifying exam, which enabled you to go on after the first year in the mechanical science tri-course. So it was structures, heat engines, electricity, I forget all the other ones now, but it was mechanical, electrical and civil, really, in essence.
Must have been very hard work to do all that in such a short time.
Well, one had a different mental attitude to it due to age, I suppose, because when I went back after the war and carried on, the effort was terrible. My mind had other priorities, I suppose, but no, it was encouraging. It was quite nice. I enjoyed it. I got about halfway up the scale in the exam marks, so I wasn't too worried. I wasn't too clever and I wasn't too stupid.
It's always dangerous to be at the extremes.
Yes, yes.
Did you do any military training on the side while you were doing this theoretical?
Through the SDC, yes.
What did you do there? Do you remember any of that?
Well, frankly, I suppose we spent an awful lot of our time manning pillboxes, because whenever there was an emergency, and this was after Dunkirk, we had to turn out in the middle of the night and incarcerate ourselves in one of these dreadful pillboxes. I mean, they had practically no field of fire at all. And that was another thing which struck me as being a pretty negative approach to warfare. I thought, well, this is ridiculous, you're just a sitting duck here. So, from the word go, I suppose I was beginning to build up a sort of battery of prejudices.
Where were these pillboxes? Were they in Cambridge itself, or were they beyond?
Oh, they were beyond. And looking back, I mean, I think I'd have felt safer outside the pillbox.
Because you'd be less conspicuous, or?
Well, because of the limited field of fire. It was quite extraordinary, because I think well after the war, if I've seen a lot of pillboxes still remaining in this country, I've gone through an exercise myself as an enemy. I thought, well, I want to get through past that lot. Well, you just sort of go round the back. It's quite extraordinary that we should have built these things.
Well, I think they were built in a panic
after
evacuation. And I don't think they were particularly scientifically sighted.
No.
Presumably they should have been in groups to cover each other's
right
rear end.
Mutual,
yeah, mutual support. Yes.
Yes.
Did you have to indulge in any construction work? Were you building defences of any sort as part of your STC?
No. No, I don't think we did. It was all rather sort of gentlemanly, I think. I don't think we dirtied our hands very much.
What happened then when you got to the training regiment? I think you were, you say April 41, you were posted to the 3rd Training Battalion of the Royal Engineers.
In Ripon.
In Ripon, yeah.
I was square bashing for the first 6 weeks. Wonderful at that age. NCO humour. It was all, in a way, great fun. I suppose I should mention, yes, the most despicable record was that I and another chap who had the misfortune to be at the bottom of the alphabetical list, Wally Womack, he got killed, poor chap. And when we went into, we were marched into one of these single-story spider buildings in Ripon. When we were halted outside the last barrack room, and there were, say, 20 beds, well, there were 22 of us with Womack and Wright at the back. And so we were sent off at the double, of course, to draw bedboards from the quartermaster. We didn't know what bedboards were, so armed with these things, two little trestles about 3 inches high, I suppose, about 2 foot 6 wide or 2 foot, planks or joined together planks, I rather forget, about 6 foot long, 6 foot 6 maybe, and back we came, and we laid them down in line with the beds, that's right, and we put our biscuits on and reported back to whatever we were meant to be doing. The following day, in Reveille, after Reveille, a sort of frantic brushing of dust and all the rest of it, and then dashing out to get our next parade tidied up. We came back to change in inevitably no time flat from drill kit to PT kit or something. In the middle of this, we were told, Sappers, Wright and Womack, you're to report at the company office. Oh, good, that's fine. So down we go. And there we found the Sergeant Major on the veranda. He said, Sappers, Wright and Womack? Yes, Sergeant Major. You're on a charge. And we thought, oh, how nice. That sounds good, doesn't it? We didn't know what we were in for. Anyway, to cut a long story short, we were given 3 days CB.
What for? What was the charge?
The charge was, it was Section 40, I suppose. But anyway, we stood capless, separately, I think, in front of the company commander. And he said, Lieutenant Bloggs, what is your evidence? And this voice came from behind. Upon the morning of something, I had occasion to visit barrack room number 10, where I found the bed areas of Sappers Wright and Womack in a disgusting and insanitary condition. So we were for it. And by God, our feet didn't touch the ground. After the last parade, we were on continuous fatigue. Oh, God, it was dreadful.
What sort of things did you have to do on fatigue?
One thing I had to do was to clean out the somebody's office. And I was equipped with a bucket of warmish water, I suppose, and a broom and a brush. And I was doubled to the this office when I was about 20 yards ahead of the escorting regimental policeman with a big ash stick in case I should prove it obstreperous. He'd double mark time me, see, while he caught up, and then he'd scream at me from about 2 inches away from my double march, and we went sort of leapfrogging along in this way to some office or other. And then I got down on my hands and knees and scrubbed and all the rest of it. And I can remember this chap more or less saying, well, you don't want to do it this way, you want to do it that way and all the rest of it. And actually sort of helping me out. It was
What, the regimental policeman who'd been tormenting you became your mentor?
Yes.
From tormentor to mentor.
Yeah. Actually, he was all right. It was I forget what he was called, I suppose. He was called the provost sergeant, yes, who appropriately for a sapper unit was called Sergeant Pick. And he was a very good bloke, I think. He screamed and shouted and all the rest of it. I can remember him coming. I had to go into the guard room to clean out one of the cells. And I suppose I double marched around to the back area and double marked time in front of this cell door. And the Sergeant Pick went up to this thing and beat on this door suddenly. I can imagine the fellow inside, who was having a kip or something, suddenly leaping to his feet, opened the door, and we came alongside each other. He was facing out, I was facing in. And I must have had a very long face, because out of the corner of his eye, his mouth, he said to me, don't take it too seriously, mate, you'll get over it, or something like that. Oh, it was a wonderful education.
How did you take to this new form of discipline? Was it...
the whole thing was novel and wonderful. I was a bit miffed by that, I suppose, but it was all part of the thing. No, I wouldn't have missed it for anything.
What was the accommodation like? You said you were in spider buildings.
Pretty good. It was, it was fairly recently built. Baths and wash basins and everything. No, it was not bad at all. I can remember, because we'd started off, like your father, in Colchester, and then we'd gone to Cambridge, and then it was virtually my first night in the army at Ripon, and I can remember hearing the bugle of Reveille, and I thought, here we are in the army. And I think about three notes had sounded, and I was just sort of galvanising myself to get out of bed, and the barrack room door swung open, and there was our class sergeant, who, what was his name? Doherty, from Glasgow, I think, and yelling at us as we were about a quarter of a mile away, "Go bid your bloody meal!" And oh, it was wonderful.
Did everyone take it in the same spirit, everyone in your squad?
Difficult to say. I think we did, yes. One or two chaps who looked a bit miserable, but perhaps I did. I didn't know.
What was the food like?
Oh, marvellous. Well, I mean, I thought it was marvellous. A lot of people complained, but compared to what we had at school, it was marvellous, I think.
Did you have a more or less standard working day during this basic training phase?
Oh, yeah, really, it was at 6, and what time did we... I think 5 or 6 in the evening, something like that, and then we broke off and went to the naffy or whatever. Yes. No, it was very, I suppose, efficient. It was... It all went like clockwork. It was a great... introduction to something which I think went up in my respect. I thought, well, what a wonderful organisation it was. There were all sorts of funny things. I can remember we were doing what was called wet bridging on the river, I think it's Ure, that goes through Ripon, and suddenly the corporal looked at his watch. He thought, crikey, we were meant to be down somewhere in the... back in the barracks, you see, which was about a couple of miles away. So we all dropped what we were doing and tidied up a bit and fell in and doubled back towards the barracks. What were they called now? Hybrid? No, I forget. It doesn't matter what they were called. But anyway, there were three units in this barrack area, three different barracks, I suppose. And we came through the main gate and down a hill at the double, and approaching the right turn into Command Road or whatever it was called, past the guard room, we were given a whole series of commands, the first of which was prepare to break into slow time, no, into quick time, because it was double time. Prepare to change into double time, quick time. Quick march, and we sort of slid, and one, two, three, and right wheel, and as we right wheeled, this wonderful voice rang out from the RSM, "Don't do that, Corporal, you might make them tired." Aim out, double march, and we were up, back up the gate again, you see. Oh, it was hilarious, the whole thing. But it was, I suppose the Romans started it or somebody, but I mean, one just heard a shout, and your muscles reacted before your brain did, virtually.
Instinctive conditioned response.
Yes.
You mentioned that you were doing wet bridging. Did you do a lot of sapring training at Ripon? What were you introduced to the arts of the engineer?
We didn't have, I mean, it was a tiny river. I suppose we had folding boats, I think, yes. Yes, it was... We learnt how to lift, and the idea was as soon as you put something down, you double back to where you were picking other things up from. And for instance, a road bearer, which was a four-man load, the first man there would go to the front, and the next man would go three-quarters of the way along, and so on, you see, and or two-thirds. And... then when the last man arrives, he'd give the orders, prepare to lift, stand around it, that's right, prepare to lift, lift, up. He would stick it up on his shoulder and off he'd go. But one of the fatigues on the on my, jankers it was called, yes, that's right, my detention or whatever, was lifting or moving stuff down on the wet bridging side. I suspect we were doubled all the way there. And it was singularly unedifying because we were picking up road bearers from one place in this field, moving it from another, and we knew perfectly well that somebody would come and move them back again. That was a bit frustrating. And I can remember doubling up to this road bearer, arriving as number three, waiting for number four to come, and screamed at by the sergeant, "What are you doing, you idle sapper?" And I was waiting for the fourth man. He said, "It's not a four-man load, it's a three-man load." So we picked up the thing with three blokes. And, of course, it was specially selected because the ground was uneven. And if you were the bloke in the middle, you suddenly took a four-man load on your shoulder. But very character building in a sort of junior rank sense, I think. Marvellous.
Were you in a special squad for potential officers, or were you just thrown into an ordinary recruit squad?
No, it was special. It was. I think we were called number 100 party, and we were regarded as a total oddity.
You mentioned PT gear. Was there a lot of emphasis upon physical training?
Oh, gosh, yes. We had a chap, QMSI Power, God, I can remember his name, and he looked like a sort of two-legged wasp and behaved rather like one, too. God, he was a martinet. He really was. I think he was a bit of a sadist, really. But I don't think I learnt much from PT there, but one learnt to do what one was told, I suppose.
Was there an emphasis on route marching? Was that part of
No, it didn't do any, as far as I can remember. The only route march we did was when we were in Torquay.
And games, were they part of the training? Was there a...
No, we didn't have time for that at all. No, we didn't have any games that I can remember. No. I mean, at weekends you'd think so, but we did at Torquay, but not...
Not in the basic training.
No, I don't think we did.
What could you do then when